Rob is leaving. Actually, I'm not going to take responsibility. I'm going to give the responsibility to Rob. Literally. Last month I spoke here. I'm really having a good time this summer. It occurred to me to ask, poor Rob has to sit through every talk. You guys get to come, not come, go on vacation, whatever you do. He's got to listen. Or not. So I asked him after the talk last Sunday, I said, what would you like me to talk about? You know, like rather than me trying to dream up, okay, what do I think, either what do I want to talk about, or what do I think you need to hear, which is always a problem. There was an early 20th century Jewish philosopher named Franz Rosenzweig. One of whose claims to fame was he wrote a book called Star of Redemption. He wrote it on postcards from the front during the First World War. You know, and they were compiled, they became a book. But one of the things he said was that the words of the rabbi tend to fall into this abyss between pulpit and pew. That's probably why I seldom stand up on the pulpit. But he said that that is so because the rabbi has a tendency to be answering a question that nobody asked. Which really is a wise thing. So I asked Rob, what would you like me to talk about? And he said, what do you do when people are angry at you? And maybe they've been angry for a long time. And they might be angry for something you did or for something they think you did. And there's no way to communicate, there's nothing you can do about it, and you just know there's this pocket of anger out there. And I was reminded of an email I got from a woman in Los Angeles. We lived in Los Angeles before coming up here, who told me in the email that she at long last, after many years, had finally recovered from something I had told her when she was a client in therapy. She said, I had told her that in a past life, she was one of the thieves that was crucified next to Jesus. Now, I've never said anything like that. I really don't talk about past lives in that kind of specific way. I realized afterwards, after I sent her a response, which I will tell you, I realized what I should have said, what I wished I had written. Ugh. I wished I had said, well, you were. I mean, it's not my fault. It's you. Blame the messenger. You know, but I wrote to her, I said, I don't think I ever said that to anybody. That's just not the kind of thing I'd say. And she had said that her husband, from whom she's now divorced, was also at that session, and she made sure that he remembered it too, which I thought her language was probably accurate. I reminded her that for over 30 years, I don't do it anymore, for over 30 years I recorded on cassette tape all the sessions I did and gave people the cassette so that if they wanted to, they could hear what really happened. And I said, you know, if you have that cassette, I'd really be interested in hearing it. She informed me in the letter that she, not only did the therapist help her finally recover, but she has been telling everybody she can what a terrible therapist I am and how I wounded her. And she is now a therapist. Now, of course, that's an accusation for something that I didn't do. When anger is coming, though, you know, from a distance, and from a location where we can't really respond in any kind of way, where there's no real communication, in a way it doesn't matter if something happened or didn't happen. It's like there's a pocket of upset. And although we might not think of it all the time, there are things that will re-stimulate that experience. Now, I don't know if any of you can identify with having people in your past who are upset with you. But maybe you know someone who has that occurrence, and some of the things that I talk about might be helpful for them. But anger is a problem. Anger is a big problem. Anger's at the top of the list of the seven deadly sins. And they're called that because they're seven things that particularly keep us from claiming our spirituality. Anger traps us in our separateness. It traps us in our fragmentation. It keeps us locked into what's wrong and what's not yet and what needs to change. It keeps us separate. And as long as we are trapped in that separateness, we are unavailable for the greater levels of inclusivity which spirituality speaks and is. I looked up the word anger and found that it came from a Latin word, angere, which means to strangle. I thought, I'd like to strangle that woman. But it is strangulation. You know, anger has a terribly high cost. A high cost in terms of our health. It does terrible things to our bodies. It does terrible things to our emotions. It does terrible things to our minds. And it supports us doing terrible things to each other. In the Talmud, which is the first major body of literature in Jewish tradition written after the compilation of the Bible, was completed in the year 500 of the Common Era, there's a statement about when the advantage of being up here is that I can see you. I'll stand down here. There's a statement that if you want to choose somebody for your friend, not only experience them at times when things are fine, but see how they are when they're angry. Because anger is the emotion that brings us closest to idolatry. And idolatry, of course, is forgetting the interconnectedness of all being, forgetting our oneness, forgetting our way. And nothing can do it as quickly as anger. And I wondered about the power of negative energy. I remember when I was starting out as a rabbi and I would give a sermon. And after the sermon, there would be after the service, there would be what's called an Oneg Shabbat, which is like a coffee hour. And people would comment on the sermon, and one person might have been upset by something. And I noticed that when I drove home, that was the voice that was in my mind. What remarkable power! It's like there could be 99 people saying, that's fine, and one person could say, that's really terrible, and the weight. Why is that? And of course, the why is that we are vulnerable to those feelings within ourselves, that we carry already within ourselves suspicions that we're not actually as all right as we would like to pretend. And so when negative energy comes from the outside, it often re-stimulates those parts of ourselves that we'd rather not look at, that we'd rather not contend with. You know, sometimes I feel like I walk around as a sponge rather than as Teflon to the comments of others. And I found literally training myself over the years to take compliments the same way as taking criticism, namely to listen, but to honor that that's the experience of the person who is expressing that experience. So if somebody says that was really great, I think I'm glad you're having that experience. And if somebody says that was really terrible, I can think I'm really sorry you're having that experience. But the radical truth is that we each create our own experience. There are events, and we interpret them, and we manifest our feelings. And one of the most dangerous sentences in the English language is, you make me so angry. You made me so mad. Well, no, that's not true. And when we live as if it's true, we are trapped in our separateness, and we are trapped in our enslavement to others. You don't make me mad, and you don't make me happy. I make me mad, and I make me happy. I can use the stimulus of what you might say or what you might do, but I'm utilizing it, and we all do that. So chances are, if I were free from feelings of self-doubt and feelings of upset with myself, then when anger is directed at me by others, it would probably be less absorbed. Which means, once again, darn it, every time the anguish comes, every time the pain comes, every time the difficulty comes, it's another opportunity. It's an opportunity to enter into the next stage of my own, of our own spiritual growing. I'll tell you what this week has been in the Jewish calendar. This week contains the highest and the lowest. It contains the day of national mourning, and it contains one of the highest Torah portions in the year. The day of national mourning is called Tisha B'Av, which is a number. It's the ninth day of the Hebrew month of Av. The Hebrew calendar is a lunar calendar, 12 months, but obviously they have different names than the English calendar. And the ninth day of the Hebrew month of Av is the day on which the temple in Jerusalem was destroyed in the year 70 of the Common Era by the Romans. And that was seen as a day of national destruction. And because of the seriousness of that, a lot of other events of destruction have kind of been attracted to the ninth of Av and marked on that day. So that it's seen that the first destruction of the temple in 586 BCE was on the ninth of Av. We don't actually know that, but it's everything comes together. Some of the martyrs, some of those who were martyred because they were Jewish, particularly during Roman times, comes on the ninth of Av. We read the biblical book called Lamentation, which, if ever you've seen, is not a happy book. And on the very same week comes a Torah portion. You know, every week has a portion of the first five books of the Hebrew Bible assigned to it. And the portion that is always assigned to the week that has Tisha B'Av in it is a portion that has that in it. I don't know how many of you are aware, but you got on the wall in the book of Matthew and in the book of Mark in the Christian Bible, Jesus is asked, what's the most important commandment in the Torah? Unfortunately, most translations say, what's the most important commandment in the law? But that's because Torah was translated into Greek as nomos, which means law. And Torah doesn't mean law, it means teaching. And of course, since they were speaking Aramaic and talking about a Hebrew text, he was asked, what's the most important teaching in the Torah? And this is what he said. This is Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4, and then 5 and 6 and 7. One of the Gospels has the first line. Both of the Gospels have the next line. What's the most important teaching in the Torah? He says, listen, Israel, the Eternal is our God. The Eternal is one. The Hebrew actually says, and he would have known this, the Eternal is within us as our God. You know, the absolute transcendent awakens within each one of us as our God. The Eternal is one. And then it goes on, and you shall love the Eternal, your God, with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might, or with all your mind. The translations of that last phrase differ. And then he said, that's the first commandment. The second comes from Leviticus chapter 19, the Ahavta L'Re'acha Kamocha, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And of course, when Jesus was asked, this is actually what he said. He said, Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad, because at that time Jesus was a Jewish teacher teaching Jews, praying and reading Hebrew and speaking Aramaic. As I told the first service, that was before Jesus invented Christianity. I also told them I have to be careful where I say that. So in 1 week, in the Jewish psyche, you've got destruction. Not only destructions of the past, but possible destructions of the future, because for those of you who know something about the Jewish psyche, particularly after the Holocaust, there is always a residual paranoia. Like, we had never been as comfortable and as assimilated as we were in Germany. It's why so many German Jews didn't leave. They just could not believe that that could happen. So it's not a mystery that there are a lot of Jews who fear that happening again. But in the week that has all that comes the week that says, remember everything is one, and remember that the only way, the way of that one is love. darn it. I mean, sometimes the ego just wants to get righteously indignant. Sometimes just getting angry is so attractive, particularly when we are right. Once, when arguing with my wife, Ruth, I was right. And I remember I did not want to give up that anger, even though it was time to give it up. I'm right. Our egos are wondrous things. But we can never get where we want to get through anger, just as we can never get to peace through violence. We can only get to love through love. We can only get to justice through justice. We can only get to peace peacefully. So it's not to be a doormat. It's to speak our limits and speak our needs. It's not to show up in places where we know the consequence is going to be hurtful and painful. But it's somehow to learn to release the shells around our own hearts that our own anger creates. Anger that's a response to hidden fear. Anger that's a response to things not going the way we'd like. To allow ourselves to have our feelings. And then to go, okay, now what? Now something else is happening. Now something else is going on. I have a quote from Alexander Solzhenitsyn. If only there were evil people somewhere insidiously committing evil deeds, and it were necessary only to separate them from the rest of us, and destroy them. I mean, isn't that the message of the war on terror? Isn't that the message of the war on evil? There are bad people, and all we've got to do is identify them, separate them, and destroy them. And everything will be okay. But he goes on, the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being. And who is willing to destroy a piece of his or her own heart? The problem with the anger in the world, as Pogo would say, is us. To take offense is as problematic as giving offense. The person who wakes up quickest wins. The person who wakes up quickest wins. But the person who wakes up quickest has a greater responsibility. Because a person who wakes up quickest has greater freedom. So how are we to deal with those pockets of energy that believe things about us that may or may not be true, that feed themselves and others on anger at us? You know, there's no better, simpler way to gain cohesiveness in a community than to rally around a common enemy. And sometimes some of us find ourselves to be the enemy that others are rallying against. And there are times when defending is simply going to turn another person into an enemy, and it won't achieve what we need to achieve. So knowing that there are times when the answers simply cannot be agreed upon between or among people, I would like to invite you into a meditation. And as I've been teaching on Wednesday nights, I encourage people before they meditate to take a few moments and relax the body. To take our tensions with us into our meditation is not terribly helpful. And if you ever find that you're so agitated that relaxation is not possible, it's not time to meditate. But just for a moment now, take a deep breath and be aware of how that feels. If you tend to breathe mostly in your chest, consciously let the breath begin in the belly. Let the belly fill with the air first and then the chest. And take a moment to begin a simple scan of your body. Perhaps beginning with your feet and ankles. I'm just going down there and examining how they are. And if there's tension, letting it go. And letting your feet and ankles be soft. And then letting your scan move up your legs, your knees, your thighs, your hips. And if you find tension, let it go. Let your body be soft. And then let your attention move upward to your belly and your back. Let your body be as it is. Be aware of your chest and your shoulders. Sometimes we wear our shoulders up around our ears. Let the shoulders go. Let the shoulders be soft. And be aware of your neck, your jaw, perhaps the strongest muscle in our bodies, the jaw. Let it go soft. And our face, our eyes, forehead, scalp. And as the meditation continues, when I speak sentences in the first person, after I say a sentence, repeat that sentence silently to yourself. Because during this meditation, we will become aware of being surrounded by a gentle sphere of golden light, totally surrounded. You might have a visualization of that. You might have a sensation of a vibration or a warmth or a coolness. You might have an idea of it, however it manifests in this moment. Because in this moment, I am surrounded by a gentle cocoon, a gentle sphere of golden light. This golden sphere of light that surrounds me supports all that is highest and finest within me. The golden sphere of light that surrounds me naturally supports energies of wholeness and healing, and naturally draws out any energies of negativity, dissolving them without harm for my own greatest good and for the greatest good of all. I am surrounded by a gentle sphere of golden light. This light welcomes positive healing energies from the outer world. And this sphere of light reflects back to Source any negative energies aimed my way. The sphere of light naturally reflects back to Source negative energies for the greatest good of all. And perhaps there are others in your life whom you would like to affirm, supported by their own golden sphere of light. So take a moment to see them, to affirm them, surrounded by the light of their being. A light that supports their healing and their wholeness. A light that naturally draws out any negativity, dissolving it without harm. See them surrounded by a golden sphere of light that welcomes positive energies from outside themselves, but reflects back to Source any negativity for the greatest good of all. And if there are those in your life with whom there is conflict, past or present, ill will or ill feelings, affirm them surrounded by the light of their being. Affirm that the light that surrounds them naturally supports their healing and their wholeness, and naturally draws out and dissolves any energies of negativity without harm for the greatest good of all. And the golden sphere of light that surrounds them welcomes positive energies from the world, yet reflects back to Source any negative energies for the greatest good of all. And return to your own light. I am surrounded now by a gentle sphere of golden light. This light of my being supports wholeness and healing. The light that surrounds me draws out any negativity, dissolving it without harm. The light that surrounds me welcomes positive, healing, growthful energies from my environment, yet reflects back to Source any negativity aimed my way for the greatest good of all. I am surrounded by a radiant sphere of golden light. I walk in this light. I live in this light. I bring this light with me to all the situations in my life. I share this light. I celebrate this light with all I meet. And gently allow your eyes to open. It feels so good in here. Thank you for sharing your light.